Well, it's good to see you all back again. Have you been learning some good stuff? You gonna put it all in practice? Yeah, it'll take a while. And don't do it all overnight, or you might just kill yourself, right? Learn to make changes as you can embrace them intelligently, and as your stomach will keep up with the changes. You know, some people make changes really fast, and then they have lots of gas. That's because there's a war going on in your gut between new bacteria populations, which are actually healthier for you, and the old bacteria populations. And so we're going to talk about cancer today. How many here know somebody with cancer? In the year 1900, I would have asked an audience, I wouldn't have been around, but if I had asked an audience, almost nobody would have raised their hands. Because in the year 1900, only 3% of death certificates listed cancer as a cause of death. How have we come so far? Well, things are happening. I was watching a baker bake a cake. A carrot cake. Oh, carrot cake. It's got carrots. It must be healthy. And so he put in a gallon scoop of oil. And then he put in a gallon scoop of eggs. And then he put in a gallon scoop of sugar. I'm thinking, wow, it must be, he's probably going to put in a whole 5-gallon container of flour. But no, only 1 gallon of flour. I'm thinking, this thing isn't even half flour. And then he put in some carrots and some nuts. And I'm really thinking, wow, and here I was deceived in the past that maybe the carrot cake was better than the white cake or something. And now I'm really in consternation. And then he comes out with the cream cheese frosting, for which he had gone all the way down to, I think it was Ecuador himself, to acquire the special vanilla. And oh, did he brag about his vanilla. And then he's going to cook this thing. And, well, this guy was my partner. I mean, in medical practice. He was the other orthopedic surgeon at Parkview Adventist Medical Center. I was up in Maine just this last summer, looking around. We were doing some series of meetings. We went back to the old town where the hospital was, and I looked in one of the newspapers that one of my patients had been the editor of, and I'm looking through the newspaper, and all of a sudden, I see this picture of my former colleague, my partner. Well, what's his picture doing in there? So I go to reading. Okay, the treasured orthopedic surgeon at Parkview Adventist Medical Center passed away July 9th. Whoa. So I was running around town, and I'm like, what did he die of? Did he get run over? So I saw one of the other physicians in town. I said, hey, Dr. Boyd, what did Dr. Calvota die of? He said, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Well, how do you get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? You get the viruses from eating dairy products, and you get the disease cropping up from eating too much sugar. And so he had died of his own creations, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And because he's a physician, he decided he didn't need insurance. And so then he decided all these expensive treatments to try to survive, and it totally broke the family. So he's dead, and they're broke. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Cancer has surpassed heart disease as the number one cause of death for Americans under the age of 85. And so we know a lot of people with cancer. And people get the big C word and they feel like they're going to die. Some of them just give up. When we were medical students in Loma Linda, they used to take us all and line us up, have us check out the patient in front of everybody, and have us tell them what the patient had. So one day it was my turn. Dr. Clark examined the patient. Why do you think, what do you think that thing is on the patient's leg? And on this patient's leg, right on the front of their, what you might call a shin, was a raised purple area. And I'm looking at this thing and I said, well, is it Kaposi sarcoma? And the attending physician said, well, yes, that's right. And then he said, well, why do you think they have Kaposi sarcoma? So I said, well, are they HIV positive? And the attending said, well, no, and that probably is the number one reason why we would, you know, would think. But in reality, this patient has had a kidney transplant. And so that they won't end up rejecting the kidney, they are on immunosuppressive drugs. And so their immune system is wiped out with the drugs. And that is why the Kaposi sarcoma came up. Got me to thinking. You mean anything that wipes out your immune system can leave you open to develop cancer? And it's true. I mean, AIDS alone Being HIV positive with an immune system that's incompetent increases your risk of all cancers by twice at least. Kaposi sarcoma is up by 1,300 times. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, like my partner had, 135 times. And so when your immune system goes down, cancer tends to crop up. Other things that will wipe out your immune system are like sugar, refined carbohydrates, corn flakes and milk, like we talked about in our diabetes lecture. And so the more your immune system is wiped out, the more cancer you get. For somebody on a lot of sugar, breast cancer is up 40%, prostate 60%, ovarian 70%, cervical, gastric, melanoma. What's melanoma? Skin cancer. But I thought skin cancer was caused by the sun. Sun's been around for an awful long time. Cancer is getting worse and worse, and not the sun. The sun isn't getting worse and worse. And so melanoma, pancreatic cancer and endometrial cancer, that's uterine cancer. So anything that wipes out your immune system leaves you open for more cancer. Haven't we been told that eating sugar is worse than eating meat? But why is it that if my immune system is down, I end up with cancer? Well, it has to do with the fact that cancer is largely an infectious disease, at least in many cases. We've been told it comes from a germ, right? And so a lot of these infectious agents are viruses. Viruses that cause cancer are multiple. Here's hepatitis B or C, ends up in liver cancer. Human papillomavirus, that virus for which they're giving little girls vaccines and running their lives, ends up with cervical cancer. Human T cell leukemia causes leukemia and lymphoma. Herpes viruses, it's a herpes virus number 8 that leads to Kaposi sarcoma. So one virus wipes out the immune system and the other virus gives you the disease. Anyway, the list could be much longer than this, and so, you know, I won't bore you with a very long list, but the point is, when the immune system goes down, the infectious agents come up, and you end up with all kinds of things, even rheumatoid arthritis, but that's another topic. All right, so, well, okay, but how did I get all these viruses? A lot of these viruses come from animal products. Cancer mortality among workers at meatpacking plants. These folks are dealing with animals and animal body fluids. And over time, they get exposed to all these viruses. If we check their blood, we can find that the blood has evidence that viruses have been there and may still be there. And these workers have a higher incidence of cancer of the lung, mouth, throat, colon, bladder, and kidney. What about these guys that are just working behind the counters of the supermarket down here, running large chunks of meat through a bandsaw, making those special cuts and packaging it? And when that bandsaw is running through the meat, the blood gets in the air, they breathe it in. They have a higher incidence of lung cancer, lymphoma, that's cancer of the lymph nodes, leukemia, that's cancer of the blood. And so animal products are a big source of these viruses. Oh yeah, but you're talking to a bunch of vegetarians. We don't eat meat. Well, it's in everything. It's in the milk. Cancerous breast tissue has 3 times the incidence of infection with bovine leukemia virus, a virus common in dairy cattle and their milk. And so a lot of breast cancer coming from drinking milk from the breasts of cows. Cow won't even drink breast milk their whole life. Why should we? And so it makes a difference. Well, another factor to be considered in cancer production is hormones. Breast cancer not only takes a virus, but a lot of times hormones are necessary. In the absence of hormones, breast cancer is very unlikely to progress. And so looking at this, one of the most fertile hormones for breast cancer is estradiol. Estradiol is an important hormone for a young lady to become a woman at a right time in life, but you don't want that to be happening your whole life. And so estradiol is bad later in life. There's a greater incidence of cancer the more exposure you've had to this hormone if you started periods earlier in your life. Now, do you remember when in Puerto Rico they had young girls and, well, 9 or 10 having periods? And they traced it to hormones in animal products, milk and eggs. Well, late menopause, where you have more years of exposure to hormones, hormone replacement therapy, and postmenopausal obesity. What about if you have an abortion? Your body had all these hormones to support a pregnancy, but you lost the pregnancy, and now the hormones are there unopposed. Then there are problems. So it increases the risk of cancer. Now, like we said, those Puerto Rican children were exposed to large amounts of hormones in eggs and milk. Well, let's just look at this. Do you remember back in the year 2000 when the United States was trying to push beef on the Europeans, and the Europeans were saying, no way, don't send your products over here, we don't want them. How many remember that? Yeah. And during that time, a lot of research came out to show why they were so concerned. Now, a woman has 4 quarts of blood. In those 4 quarts of blood, if she has more than 9 units of estradiol when she's postmenopausal, her risk of breast cancer goes up sevenfold. It's probably a high number to shoot at, but let's just use that as a comparison. How many units of estradiol in a European beef steak? 4.3, which means if you eat that beef steak, you just raise the amount of estradiol in your body by 50%. Well, okay, what about a U.S. beef steak? Notice this, 20 units of estradiol. Well, they found that if they give these cattle all these hormones, it takes, well, they can produce 20% more cow on the same amount of feed. You can gain 20% more weight by eating the same amount of cow, too, because it passes right on to you, and you can get cancer. And so that's American beef. Yeah, but I don't eat beef. How about milk? Well, remember we said the Puerto Ricans were having trouble with milk and eggs causing early puberty. 1 liter of skim milk has 18, which means you just tripled the amount of estradiol in your entire body. 2 eggs, 13. And so this is part of the problem. Okay, and then we get into that period of life when we have hot flashes, and we shouldn't be uncomfortable. We don't deserve to be uncomfortable, and so we're going to take pills. All right, oral contraceptive pills. Those help with a number of pregnancy problems, right? Don't want any more babies. Okay, oral contraceptive pills in a study in Europe. 37,000 women, college age, on oral contraceptive pills. Increase their risk of breast cancer about 50%. Hormone replacement therapy, so you don't have hot flashes. Estrogen alone increases the risk of endometrial cancer, that's your uterus, and ovarian cancer. And when you combine estrogen and progesterone, it increases the risk of breast cancer. So these hormones are not benign. They have side effects. Now, when we get to talking about the cure or the solution, we'll talk about evening out hormones. There'll be a lot of key ideas about how to deal with menopause if you just kind of apply this information to that. We said that if you have postmenopausal obesity, you're in trouble. It's because fat cells are involved in estrogen production. And if you have breast cancer, and we're trying to, you know, get you over it, if you have all this excess estrogen stimulating the cancer, your prognosis is much worse. And so obesity increases the risk of dying of your breast cancer as well. But it's not just breast cancer, cancer of the pancreas, colon, rectum, prostate, endometrium, gallbladder, cervix, ovary, as well as the breast, all increase with more obesity. Now that's the fat that you wear. How about the fat that you eat? Notice here across the bottom we have total dietary fat intake. Here we have grams. And you know broccoli doesn't have a lot of fat. So the fat that's being consumed is usually from other sources, usually animal sources or highly refined vegetable oils. And so notice the United States, high intake of fat, high death rate from breast cancer. Breast cancer death rate is almost at the top next to Canada. Well, okay, but look down here at Japan. Low fat intake and low breast cancer rate. But you know those Japanese, they move to America, they start eating with all the rest of us, all the junk food, all the fat, and pretty soon they're right up here, high on the list with lots of deaths from breast cancer. Fat in the diet is a big problem. And anything that affects the breast, you can be pretty sure it affects the prostate, and vice versa. So, high saturated fat intake triples the risk of dying of metastatic prostate cancer, dying of prostate cancer. So serious business. And then there's certain fats that are especially dangerous, trans fat. You know they've gone to labeling things, no trans fat. And you notice the serving size gets smaller and smaller because if they can lower the serving size enough to where the proportion of trans fat goes below half a gram, then legally they can say no trans fat. So you get out your TV dinner, you stick it in the microwave, you look at the carton while it's cooking. Oh, look, only 3 grams of fat and no trans fat. That's great. Let's see. And there's only 10 servings in this. I gotta get 9 other people to help me eat this one little thing. You know. All right. A low-fat diet greatly reduces skin cancer. Precancerous lesions that turn into cancer. If you're on a low-fat diet, you have 1/3 the incidence of
skin cancer.
And 21% is not really low, low, low fat. Remember when we talked about cholesterol, we were shooting for 10 to 15%. So you've heard several things about skin cancer now. Sugar causes it, at least it's in the mix. High fat, and when we talked about cholesterol, cholesterol in the diet, especially oxidized cholesterol. So you cut out the oxidized cholesterol, the fat, and the refined carbohydrates, and you eat plenty of antioxidants in the form of fruits and vegetables. Then you go out and get your sun, get your vitamin D, and then your risk of other cancers go down, and also skin cancer. So there's your little side talk on skin cancer. Now, one of the reason why viruses often cause cancer is because they go to the DNA in your cell, and they stick their DNA into that DNA. It's kind of like maybe you come here and you buy a recording of what I said, and all of a sudden there's somebody else lecturing in the middle of my lecture. Somebody else stuck something in. That's what the DNA, that's what the virus does to the DNA in the cell. It chops it open and sticks in its own DNA. And then the computer program is changed for that cell. That cell's life aspirations change. Instead of just being a happy cell that sits home in your colon, it decides to go and become a world traveler. But we call that metastatic. And it goes and grows somewhere else. And this is bad news. And so anything that changes the DNA will do this. Toxins that fry the DNA will do it too. And meat is a great source of toxins. It's very, very hard to digest meat. I mean, you're eating the muscles of this animal. What do the muscles look like under a microscope? Velcro. Bunch of little hooks hooked together, all this protein. Well, in order to unravel all that Velcro, it takes lots and lots of acid. And in the process of unraveling that protein and all that acid, it makes the protein into some very dangerous compounds, N-nitrosyl compounds. These N-nitrosyl compounds then are absorbed into the cells of your small intestine and large intestine, and they cause DNA damage, leading to cancer, colorectal cancer, colonoscopy, and they find a polyp. And then they do surgery. Then you have this bag hanging on the outside of you. And that's no fun. All right. Another thing that happens, people are seriously worried that they'll get mad cow disease or trichinellosis or some other parasite from their animal product. And so they cook it extra well done. And when they cook it extra well done, they end up causing another change in the chemical properties of the protein, which is called heterocyclic amines. These compounds also change DNA as they're absorbed into the colon, into the rectum, into the small intestine, and you end up with colorectal cancer. And so these animal products are high on the list of things that lead to cancer. It also affects cancer of other areas besides your digestive tract. Red meat and dairy products double the risk of metastatic prostate cancer. Red meat alone increases the risk by 66%. So this is a serious problem. And of course, whatever affects the prostate affects the breast. That's right. Okay, how about milk and the immune system? Milk tends to wipe out the immune system. We already said it was the source of viruses. We already said it's the source of hormones, but it also wipes out the immune system. In fact, and how many have heard of the China study? T. Colin Campbell also studied mice and rats, and if he fed them milk, they got cancer. If he tripled the amount of milk protein, then he tripled the amount of cancer the rats got. And so milk is also a stimulator of growth. I mean, milk is there to make a small calf grow to a big calf in a matter of 3-4 months. And then the calf is wise enough not to drink the stuff the rest of its life.
No, they're not all wise. We had cows that were
good. And so you have a growth stimulator, and it'll make cancer grow as well. How about cheese? A 4-year study where they looked at cheese over in Italy, they discovered that people eating lots of cheese had a 66% higher risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, that cancer my colleague died of. So cheese is part of the problem as well. I mean, you think of it. Is cheese high in antioxidants? Is cheese high in vitamins? Is cheese high in fiber? What does it have? Lots of fat, and it's all rotten fat, isn't it? And so you're eating this rotten fat, and so if it's not a part of the solution, it's probably part of the problem. Okay, yogurt. 16 ounces of yogurt a day increases the risk of prostate cancer by 61%. You know, in medical school, we just love this kind of thing. Because, you know, we call it mnemonics, learning one number, flipping it over to, you know, on the test, 16 ounces equals 61%.
1661.
All right. We can remember that. Okay, let's get away from animal products a little bit. Let's talk about toxins in our environment. You've been hearing about some wonderful toxins from Brother Gregory. Somebody's asking about 2,4-D. 2,4-D. And part of Agent Orange. Well, chemicals. But we put them right in our own houses. They had a bunch of people who are going to have their office complex remodeled. 25 people. They decided to study the people before and after remodeling. This old office building didn't have any modern materials in it. And so when they tested them beforehand, their blood was good, their natural killer cells were working, which fight cancer, and they were doing well. Then they remodeled the office. New carpet on the floor, new desks and chairs and bookcases, new insulation boards in the walls and the ceiling, new plastic plants. Anyway, all kinds of sources of carcinogenic chemicals, chloroform, acetaldehyde, formaldehyde. High levels of these showed up in their blood. Do you remember the FEMA trailers? High levels of formaldehyde. What do people end up with? All kinds of diseases. And one of those diseases is cancer. And their natural killer cells weren't working very well either. So maybe you don't want that brand new RV. Maybe you want an old one. That's what we did. We bought an old one. So we wouldn't get all those chemicals. I had a friend that bought a new one. Oh, it stunk. So what'd he do? He closed it all up, put it out in the sun, let it heat up inside till it was really hot, left it out in the sun in the desert for about 10 days, all closed up, and then he opened it all up and aired it out. And all this formaldehyde went, whew, it smelled better. We moved into a new apartment one time. New carpets. They'd done everything for us. Painted the walls. Oh, it stunk. What to do? So we took baking soda, one box for each room in the house, and emptied it in the room, all over the carpet, beat it into the carpet with a broom, and in about 3 days, all the stench went away. And we vacuumed up the baking soda. That lasted for about a year, and it started coming back, so we did it again. There's certain things you can do to help reduce some of these chemicals if you're stuck with that particular dwelling. All right, plastic society. We've become a plastic society. Everything's made out of plastic. The toys, the cars, the food containers, the water containers. Your peanut butter comes in a plastic jar. Your applesauce does. Your juice does. Cereal's in a plastic bag. Try to think of something that isn't in plastic. The tin cans are sprayed inside of the white plastic. I mean, we get everything in plastic. Remember when BPA was a problem? Herb just gave me a little article on BPA that came out recently. BPA in babies' bottles was considered to be dangerous if it was at parts, one part per trillion inside the bottle, inside the liquid that the baby was drinking, especially for young men. Well, plastic workers at plastic factories have five times the risk of cancer, pancreatic and liver. So, well, there's a reason why cancer is surpassing heart disease. There's a big reason. And so we become plastic everything. And, well, let's talk about a few chemicals. How about DDT? Oh, but we outlawed DDT back in the 70s. And then we became the biggest manufacturer and exporter of DDT. They still use it down in South America in many countries. And it comes floating up in the ocean. You catch a salmon off the coast of Alaska, it'll have toxic levels of DDT in it. And we still buy our grapes from Chile. And, well, and the stuff doesn't go away. It breaks down to DDD. This stuff causes free radical formation, oxidative stress, hormonal activity, suppresses the immune system, and yes, thus leading to cancer. So they did a study out in California, a recent study. They looked at a whole bunch of little lakes up in the high Sierras. All of them had a little bit of DDT. They looked at a particular lake called Clear Lake in California. They checked the water, the lake water. Now remember we said BPA at a part per trillion was a problem? Well, look at this. Lake water had 0.02 parts per million. Not billion, not trillion, million DDD. Okay, but that's the water. Then they looked at little aquatic plants. Well, okay, aquatic plants, 5 parts per million. So they did what we call biomagnification. They concentrated it. Then they looked at fish that ate the plants, 300 parts per million. Then there was a big fish that ate the little fish, 2,500 parts per million. Then they looked at the people. Well, no, they didn't. But they looked at sea lions off the shore of California who were eating fish. They concentrated anything in the fish another 240 times. I was up in Maryland. They brought me a newspaper. said, don't eat anything, don't eat any fish off the coast of Maryland. There's toxic levels of PCBs. You see, animals concentrate this stuff. How many pounds of grain does it take to make 1 pound of beef? About 16, I've heard. Well, okay. That means whatever you're eating in the animal is 16 times greater than what you ate in your vegetable food. And so, yeah, maybe they spray the vegetables a little bit, but a lot better to eat the vegetables than the stuff that ate the vegetables, or the stuff that ate the stuff that ate the vegetables, or the stuff that ate the, you know, you get the idea. You want to cut out the middleman. Don't let anybody get between you and the garden. And if you're doing your own gardening, then you know what's on there, right? And then you can be very sure of what you're getting at. Okay, now, the toxins cause breaks in the DNA. Luckily, we have mechanisms in place to repair breaks in DNA. Proofreading, if you please. And a few breaks can be repaired. But if the breaks accumulate, then you can end up with too many breaks. And when you end up with too many breaks, you end up with cancer. Now, I say that for two reasons. One, you don't want too many breaks to begin with. But number two, you don't want to do anything that hampers the repair process. Smoking will hamper the repair process. Lung cancer patients from that particular toxin are demonstrated to have poorer repair mechanisms in place. This isn't good. And as a consequence, just about all cancer can be traced to cigarette smoking. Not just lung cancer. Cancer of the lip, mouth, throat. You ever seen somebody that had throat cancer or voice box cancer and you have to put a buzzer to their throat? Not fun. And so you can see the list there. Another one that will do that is caffeine. Caffeinated beverages. Caffeine stops the repair of damaged DNA. For example, two or more cups of coffee per day more than double the risk of ovarian cancer, a very deadly cancer. Caffeine in a high-fat diet greatly increase breast cancer risk. Colon cancer risk goes up. A number of cancers go up that I don't have listed here from caffeine use. Oh, but I don't use caffeine. I don't smoke. But I kind of like chocolate. Bittersweet theobromine, that's the caffeine in chocolate. 1/2 ounce of milk and chocolate per day doubles the risk of prostate cancer. So it's part of the problem as well. Besides theobromine, chocolate is a fermented product. And so you have all the impact of fermented things. Okay, oh, I'm just wondering. You know, we got a new fish not too long ago. My kid likes animals. But since we're in a little RV, the animal he got was a fish. What to feed it? What do you feed the fish? Well, you go and you look. Oh, the fish, this kind of fish likes this kind of food. Good, let's get some of that food. What do you feed your cancer if you want it to grow and get big and strong? Fructose. Oh, it loves fructose. A sugar common in sodas, breads, agave, as well as many other foods, is readily metabolized by cancer cells to increase their growth and proliferation. Agave is a very high source of fructose. The roots of the plant are about 95% fructose, and no matter how you process it, the end product's going to be about 95% fructose. How about alcohol? Well, they told me I should drink a little alcohol for my heart's sake, right? Drink a little alcohol for your heart's sake. Well, anybody that did an autopsy on a drunk realized that their hearts are so flabby it couldn't hang on to a plaque if it had to. So that's just nuts. And, okay, 75% of esophageal cancers are related to alcohol, 50% of mouth and larynx cancers, 30% of liver cancers, like cirrhosis and so forth, ending up in cancer. And there's an increased risk of colon, rectal, prostate, and breast cancer. Okay, well, let's take prostate cancer, for example. Recent study showed that moderate consumption of alcohol, isn't that what they say for heart disease, moderate consumption? Moderate consumption of alcohol, defined by them as one drink 3 times a week, which is very moderate. The heart disease people want you to drink 2 drinks a day. Increases the risk of prostate cancer by 42%. And I kind of doubt it reduces the risk of heart disease by 42%. So this isn't a real good solution to heart disease. And all in all, every year there's 60,000 excess cancer deaths due to alcohol, not homicides, domestic violence, motor vehicle accidents, cancer deaths due to alcohol. Well, now, wait a minute. How many American soldiers died in Vietnam? About 70,000, Betty says. Wow. And that's over a 13-year period. This is every year. So this is a real killer. We need to, I mean, this, we've been fed a bill of goods by all the media. They want us to focus on strange things happening overseas while everybody is being wiped out here. What do we call it? Well, it's also known as the Inquisition, right? Well, sort of. All right, not really. Okay. Free glutamate, otherwise known as MSG. It's in processed foods. Triples the risk of mouth or oral cancer. So there we go, Chinese food. But MSG, as we saw the other day, is in all kinds of things. Eating too much food. You eat extra food, it pushes your hormones up. You eat extra food, and it makes it so that you end up with more and more growth going on in your body. I mean, it's evidenced by a larger spare tire in front of you. But that's because growth hormones are going up. These growth hormones increase the risk of cancer. So eating less food is very helpful. A two-meal-a-day plan helps accomplish that. Compared to a two-meal-a-day program, colon cancer risk rises 70% for 3 meals a day, 90% for 4 meals a day. What's more, each additional snack time increases the risk of colon cancer another 60%. So, trying to avoid cancer, trying to get over cancer. There's a little tip that's helpful. Now, the big killer. Where do 9/10 of all diseases originate? Mind. Stress is one of the things that's also in the mind. People who don't handle life's difficult situations very well, like who gets to control the remote, end up with more cancer. 40% higher death rate from cancer from these people, compared to people who smoke, drink, and have other medical diseases related to bad diets. Whoa, you mean I can do everything right and have stress and get cancer? Yep, we've met a number of people like that. They do everything right, but they're under a lot of stress, and they end up with cancer. Stress is not the situation. Stress is how you respond or react to the situation. And so you can see the factors there. Well, how about television? Cancer risk rises 9% per hour spent in front of the TV each day. Well, there's stress coming from the TV, but there's also a lot of electromagnetic radiation coming out of that thing. And speaking of electromagnetic radiation, cell phones, you put it up to your head, that's the side of your head you're going to get your cancer on, not the other side. It can be in your brain. It can be in your ear, acoustic neuroma. Last 2 weeks ago, I met a lady who had ear cancer, acoustic neuroma, from using actually a wireless phone, one of those hands, you know, wireless phone in the house, and trying to figure out how to get rid of it. Not good. And, well, what if I live near a cell phone tower? If you live in an area where there's lots of cell phone towers, there's some towns out in California that have been identified as high-risk cancer towns because of all the both cell phone towers, digital TV, and military installations. It greatly increases your risk. Living near high lines, high power lines, you know, the big tension lines, high voltage, increases your risk of lymphoma and leukemia. Using an electric blanket. Breast cancer risk associated with electric blanket use increases with the number of years of use, the number of seasons of use, and the length of time of use each night. So, but I want to be warm. Well, turn the thing on, heat up the bed, and then unplug it, because if you leave it plugged in, even though it's off, it can still have electromagnetic field in it, and you can be in trouble. Interesting, out in California, there was a school, brand new school, all the latest technology and computer, wireless computers, and what do you call them, CFL fluorescent lights, the squiggly screw-in fluorescent lights, and all kinds of stuff. Teachers getting thyroid cancer, kids getting leukemia and lymphoma. They couldn't keep a teacher there more than 10 years. They were out. What's going on? They came in, whole bunch of epidemiologists and professionals. They checked it out, looked for chemicals, no problem. And then they got out their meters to see what the electromagnetic fields were like. All kinds of high electromagnetic fields from these things. And so they had to do some removing of all this modern technology so that people could have school and not get cancer. Yeah, well, that's been around a long time. All right, what is the answer? Okay, you're thinking, I've done something for sure. I'm going to get cancer. Oh, no, you know, I ate out of a plastic bottle of it. You know, what's the solution? Luckily, there are some solutions. But before we go to the solution, let's stand up and do some stretching. Wake everybody up. Yes, everybody wake up, stand up. And, yes, let's do the coconut exercise, okay? You know what the coconut exercise is? Okay, everybody stand up. Put your arms up. See. All right.
Oh, good. C. All right. Oh.
Now touch your toes for the N. N. Straight out for U. Straight out for T. All right. Very good. Well, let's do it one more time. C. O. C. O. N. U. T. All right. Very good. Okay. What is the answer? What is the answer? Okay, let's see. Let's give you a little philosophy first, huh? Let's just maybe look at a little different paradigm here. Basically, we've been saying there's all kinds of things that will cause it. True philosophy of health. The only hope of better things is in the education of the people and right principles. We're destroyed for lack of knowledge. Let's fix that. Let physicians teach the people that restorative power is not in drugs, but in nature. I do hold talk on drugs. Disease is an effort of nature to free the system from conditions that result from a violation of the laws of health. So what's that mean? Well, I guess one way you might interpret that is, well, cancer is not a deficiency of chemotherapy. Or you might look at it, cancer is not just a curse that comes flying through the air and lights on some unsuspecting victim. It's caused by something. We've given you a bunch of options that it might have been caused by. And in the case of sickness, the cause should be ascertained. Unhealthful conditions should be changed. Wrong habits corrected. Had a lady call me up. Dr. Clark, I had to go to the hospital because I had trouble with my heart. They did an angio on me, and they found a vessel, and I was all under these drugs. They asked me if I wanted a stent. If I'd been wide awake, I wouldn't have wanted a stent. I'm unhappy they gave me a stent. I have a stent in my heart now. They want me to be on this drug the rest of my life for this. They told me I'd only be on the drug a year, and now I have to be on the drug 2 years. Now I'm just all upset. Is there anything I can do to get off the drug? I said, well, let me ask you a question. You're the one that had the heart trouble, and they put that stent in. Have you done anything different in the last year other than what led to your original need for that stent? Have you made any lifestyle changes whatsoever? Well, no, but, you know, ever since I became an Adventist, I've been eating the way they told me to eat, and if you haven't done anything different, craziness is doing the same thing and expecting different results, right? And so we can't do that. You know, there's another test for craziness. The Chinese have a test for craziness, for mental insanity. They take a person to a room where there's a big sink. They put a bucket under the faucet and turn on the faucet, start filling the bucket. Then they take a dipper and give it to the person to be tested and say, there, go and dip the water out of the bucket. If they take the dipper and they go over to the bucket and they start dipping the water out of the bucket without turning off the faucet, they're crazy. Well, sometimes we get heart disease and we keep doing the same things, you know. We don't know why we got it. We get treated for it. That's dipping water out of the bucket, not knowing what. I mean, there's a problem. What if you got cancer from living in a FEMA trailer? Then you go down to the doctor and he gives you more chemotherapy, more poisons to try to get rid of the cancer. Does that make any sense at all? Poison got you there, poison will get you away from there, right? And no idea why you got it. Unhealthful conditions should be changed, wrong habits corrected. Then nature is to be assisted. See, this is the big difference between lifestyle medicine, what I practice now, and regular medicine. In the case of chemotherapy, I'm going to give you a poison that won't quite kill you, but it'll kill what's getting you. And then we'll try to resurrect you. And you know how it is. We give the poison and your hair all falls out. Oh, I'm bald. Because they told me that hair is a fast-growing cell just like cancer. And since I got the chemo and it knocks out fast-growing cells, my hair all fell out. And then something starts to grow back on top of your head. What is it? Your hair. And if it's growing back, guess what else is growing back? And it takes about 5-10 years before cancer gets large enough for you to feel it anyway. And so nature is to be assisted. So in lifestyle medicine, we turn around and we say, you are the best one for fighting cancer, not some chemical potion out here. So we're going to boost your immune system. We're going to have you get rid of toxins, expel impurities, and get you to fight the cancer naturally. And then if you're strong enough to fight the cancer, you're going to be strong enough to keep it from coming back too. Nature is to be assisted in her effort to expel impurities, to reestablish right conditions in the system. So we got to change a few things, don't we? Let's look at the natural remedies, as they're called, the eight natural doctors, as some people call them, and see how they don't reverse all the things we've been talking about in the causes. Pure air, sunlight, abstemiousness, rest, exercise, proper diet, use of water, gratitude, rejoicing, benevolence, trust in God's love and care. These are health's greatest safeguards. Interesting. Well, let's start with air. We spent some time out in California. And I'm here to tell you, they no longer have to breathe by faith out there. They can see what they breathe. So pure air is a premium. And if you get pure air, it's good. Now, indoor air is often much worse than outdoor air. In fact, in a study in New York City, they took a bunch of young people at the high school. They put GPSs on them with chemical sensors and sent them home. The students, when they walked the streets, had toxic levels of chemicals. When they went home in their houses, they had 2 to 3 times toxic levels of chemicals in their environment. Not until somebody went out of the city did the toxic levels go down. Cities are a place of lots of toxins. And so if you can get outdoors away from the cities, then you get away from these toxins. And so that's recommended. They took a bunch of rats, made them have cancer, put them in 2 groups. One group was outdoors. Now, outdoors air has more negative ions. Negative ions stimulate the immune system. Negative ions make it so your immune system fights cancer better. And so you want to be outdoors. They put a bunch of rats outdoors and a bunch indoors. The ones outdoors did better. The ones indoors, their cancer grew twice as fast, twice as big. In 1918, when they ran out of hospital beds for flu victims, they made factories into hospitals. When they ran out of factory beds, they put the people outdoors in tents on the lawn. Guess who survived the flu the best? The people in the tents on the lawns. I've told some of my patients they should get a tent and live on their lawn, especially multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune diseases and cancer. And so, you know, we're told Jesus lived largely an outdoor life. So did Abraham. Sunlight. Oh, but I don't want to get skin cancer. You see, it's vitamin D that we want from sunlight, but there's other things you get from sunlight. Let me just compare here. You know, if you eat a carrot, you get 273 different active forms of vitamin A. Carotenoids, carotenes, retinols, all kinds of good things. If you take a vitamin A pill, you get one type of vitamin A in megadoses, and vitamin A pills increase cancer because they're just one dose of something in megadoses. Well, same is true of vitamin D. Taking vitamin D pills gives you one type of vitamin D in megadoses. When you get the sun on your skin, you get all kinds of costroids, of which vitamin D is only one. And all these costroids are helpful in decreasing cancer mortality. So sunning yourself, getting out and getting some sun is very important. Now, vitamin D has been studied a lot because, yes, they found they could make it, put it in a bottle, and sell it to people. So let's look at the vitamin D research. Vitamin D is a potent inhibitor of cancer growth. Protects against cancer of the prostate, breast, pancreas, and colon. And if you're deficient in it and you have colon cancer, your colon cancer grows much faster. So you do want your vitamin D. You do want your sunlight. You do want to get your vitamin D from the sunlight. Now, how about abstemiousness or temperance? Smoking. Oh, but I've smoked all my life. I'm just dead. Oh, there's no use. That's not true. In fact, the day you stop smoking, your risk of lung cancer starts to decline. The longer it's been since you smoked, the lower your risk. The longer it's been since you smoked, the more likely you are, if you do get lung cancer, to survive it. And so quitting is very good. Same is true of drinking and esophageal cancer. The longer it's been since you drank, the lower your risk of esophageal cancer. Yeah, but I don't smoke or drink. But y'all eat. And eating too much food definitely increases cancer. Sends the cell cycle into high mode. Makes them go crazy. On the other hand, caloric restriction, eating less food, not only enhances DNA repair, but also reduces DNA damage. So this is good. The people who taught us this were the Okinawans. They have 40% fewer... They eat 40% fewer calories than Americans. Haven't we been told we could often eat half what we do? They have 80% fewer breast and prostate cancers, 50% fewer ovarian and colon cancers. So, big benefits. And they eat more soy than anybody else in the world. We'll get to soy. How about rest? People who get their rest live longer. They get less cancer, less everything else. People who get too little sleep or too much sleep increase their odds of dying of cancer. Oh, look, they're doing the coconut exercise. Yes, okay, exercise. Exercise is extremely important. You gotta keep wiggling, or they're going to put you in a box. Okay, and if you are cardiovascularly fit, as opposed to being unfit, right? Well, being out of shape. People who are cardiovascularly fit have one half the risk of dying of cancer. One half. Now, there's reasons why exercise is helpful. Remember all those hormones we talked about? Estradiol? Well, if you're getting lots of exercise, it reduces estradiol. Here we go. Who is wanting to know about menopause? Here we are. Here's some pointers. We're going to have a lot of pointers here on hormones coming up. Estradiol is reduced. It balances out when you exercise. Helps get rid of some, and also some of the growth factors stimulated by overeating and drinking milk. Well, let's talk about proper diet. The proper diet. What would be the most proper diet? Well, for cancer anyway. High on the list are things that are nutrient dense, that have lots of stuff that counteract all those chemicals and food items we talked about that cause cancer. And so, nutrient dense, best thing to do is grow your own garden. You know, you pick your broccoli, within 24 hours, the nutrition has dropped by, what, 25% or 30%? It drops quite dramatically. And so if you can grow your own garden and pick it yourself and go and eat it fresh, hey, and fresh fruits and vegetables are the most potent, the highest in nutrients. And so people who eat fresh fruits and vegetables, they invigorate the immune system, heal infections, reduce inflammation, allergic diseases, and they fight cancer. And so you want to maximize fresh fruits and vegetables. One of our speakers was saying, he goes, 80 to 85% raw. That's a good thing to shoot for. One of my attendings, one of my teachers at Loma Linda, who was into natural medicine. He was our microbiology teacher, but he had his own practice. Dr. Lyle said 80% raw would be good. Well, if you're going to fight cancer, certainly good. And a lot of the programs around the country that treat cancer naturally, they don't do it with a big beef steak. They do it with raw, lots of raw food, lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds. And for example, we have a friend up in Maine. That's where we started with all our ministry. He was having trouble with his intestines. Things weren't just working right. He went to see his physician. A few tests later, he was diagnosed with very advanced colon cancer. He knew nothing of natural, and so he went for chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. They removed part of his colon. They gave him lots of chemotherapy. About 6 months later, he's having trouble in the colon again. He went back to his surgeon. The surgeon looked at him, said, well, you probably have some adhesions. Let's take you back to surgery. Took him back to surgery, opened him up, looked inside, cancer everywhere. Because when your hair starts growing back, so is your cancer. And closed him up, sent him home, said, sorry, there's nothing more we can do. But if I was you, he told him, I'd go find a naturopath. He said, a what? A naturopath. What's that? Well, you just look it up in the phone book and find out for yourself. Okay, so he kind of went on a life mission. You know, if I found the right person that was doing the right thing, I'd get over my cancer. At least that's what the surgeon implied. And so he did. He found somebody. They put him on a raw food diet. They did a bunch of colon cleanses and other expelling of toxins. And it's been 8 years now, and he's totally free of cancer. He has a little ministry where he teaches other people to do what he did. So fruit, high in antioxidants, that's part of the solution. Vitamin C, flavonoids, lemonoids, fiber, that's part of the solution. Helps to counteract these toxins. Of note is kiwi fruit. Provides protection against DNA damage, and it stimulates DNA repair. Well, okay, but remember we said coffee or caffeine stops DNA repair. So here we have an antidote, right? One cup of coffee and just eat a bushel of kiwi. Okay, I'm just kidding. I don't know how many kiwi it takes. I gotta tell you, I'm kidding because I get in trouble. I was in my clinic one day, orthopedist. Some lady came in with all these aches and pains, and I didn't see anything to operate on, so I gave her a bunch of trigger point injections. And then I looked at her very seriously and I said, and don't drink any water because it's gonna come out all those holes. She didn't laugh. I didn't catch it. She laughed. 2-3 days later, she calls in to my secretary, can you ask Dr. Clark if it's okay if I drink water now? So from then on, I might tell them that, and then I say, you know, I'm kidding. Go ahead and drink your water. It won't come out the holes. So I don't know how many kiwis, but you can see we're counteracting some of the causes. All right, pineapple. Remember those heterocyclic amines and those N-nitrosyl compounds from eating meat? Pineapple helps counteract that. Keeps those things from forming inside your stomach when you're trying to digest that difficult-to-digest stuff. So pineapple's a good thing. Tomatoes. Oh, quiz time. Let me see how astute you are. Why do I have a slide with tomatoes and a gentleman with dark skin on the slide? This takes processing to think about the different clues I've been giving you up until now. Ah, that's right. Vitamin D. Vitamin D reduces prostate cancer, but if your skin's dark, it takes much more sun to get your vitamin D. The farther north you go, the higher the risk of prostate cancer. But tomatoes can help because they have lycopene and other good phytochemicals. Tomatoes protect against cancers of the mouth, esophagus, stomach, colon, rectum, and prostate. So there you go. All right, vegetables. Vegetables are also high on the list. The leaves are for the healing of the nations. And there's a lot of valuable things in leaves and vegetables, minerals and vitamins and phytochemicals, and especially fiber. And so we recommend them. Of special note are the cruciferous family. What does cruciferous mean? Huh? It's the cabbage family, but why is it called cruciferous? What does... You've heard of crucifix. What's a crucifix? A cross. Does that mean I have to bear my cross to eat these things? The little flower that comes out has four petals. It's sort of like the shape of a cross. So somebody gave it that name, cruciferous. And what all is in the family? Yeah, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, collards, kohlrabi, yeah, a bunch of things in there. Okay. And so these things are very good. Notice they keep toxins, like DDT, from binding to DNA in the cell. So this is very sophisticated, right down at the molecular level, thereby reducing DNA damage. And what's more, they help eliminate carcinogenic toxins from the liver. Okay. You know, when you change oil on your car, you take off the old filter and you throw it away. They put on a new filter when you put in new oil. You can't do that with your filter, your liver. You're sort of stuck with it. I mean, it's been done, but replacing it is a big job. And so the liver has to cleanse itself, and it dumps its toxins out into your small intestine through the bile duct. Okay, what happens to them then? Well, if there's nothing else in your colon at that point or your small intestine, some of those toxins get reabsorbed, and they especially irritate the cells lining the intestinal tract. Oh, so what do I do about it? Well, if you're eating broccoli, it's high in fiber. It not only gets the liver to give up more toxins, but it also is there with fiber to absorb those toxins and keep them from coming in contact with your intestines and carry them out of your body so that they're gone. It's a colon cleanse, if you please. A liver cleanse, if you please. Cabbage. Now, people keep fussing about the fact that soy has a little phytoestrogen. A lot of plants have phytoestrogens. Like we said, flax has 50% more phytoestrogens than soy. But so do cabbage. Hormones and hormonally active substances. The phytochemicals in cruciferous vegetables, cabbage, broccoli, etc., significantly increase the urinary excretion of estrogens. So, more tips there for menopause as well. Eat lots of these vegetables, and especially in the raw state. Garlic. Garlic is a superfood. Garlic fights all kinds of problems. It stimulates the immune system, detoxifies carcinogen. It's actually a chemotherapy for certain cancers. I mean, it kills, you know, it fights certain cancers. It's antibiotic. And it's very good for social distancing. But you can use even the, you know, ones that aren't that bad, the capsules and tablets and so forth. Some of those have been shown to have some potential. Carrots. And carrots are another superfood. Seems like when people get cancer, they discover the carrot. My mom did. She got cancer of the uterus, had her uterus removed, and then she's drinking carrot juice all the time. I don't recommend juice. I recommend the carrots, but hey. What can you say? And it's the vitamin A, carotenoids, and carotenes, and retinols, and the fiber that give them their powerful anti-carcinogenic effect. But you don't want to take vitamin A pills. If you smoke, you know you have a risk of lung cancer. You take vitamin A pills on top of smoking, it increases the risk of lung cancer another 10%. Vitamin E pills increase the risk of prostate cancer. Folic acid increases the risk of breast cancer. All these pills are not the answer. You want to eat food as grown. You don't want to eat laboratory creations in the form of pellets. Okay, protein. We mentioned milk protein being a problem, but all animal protein tends to increase your risk of cancer. And so lowering your protein is very good. We do a whole talk on osteoporosis in which we cover protein in detail. You can watch a video of it on my website if you like. And so if you're eating a high protein diet like most Americans, it greatly increases your risk of cancer and it's spreading to the liver and lungs. It causes cancer to be more metastatic. And so protein's a problem. Certain proteins can be beneficial, but even then you don't want lots of protein. If you have cancer, you definitely don't want protein. If it runs in your family, you don't want to be getting too much protein. You know, if you ate nothing but broccoli, you'd get more than enough protein in your diet. Go tell that to your neighbor that keeps asking you where you're going to get your protein when you're vegetarian. All right, turmeric and soy help counteract the estrogenic effects of environmental toxins on breast tissue. You see, you have these receptors for estrogen in your body. Some are on the breast, some are on the ovary, some are on the uterus, some are on the colon and in their lungs. And these receptors are there so estradiol can come and plug in. And if you're a teenager and you're trying to develop into a woman from being a young girl, that's wonderful because the estradiol starts shifting the gears and putting the cells into high reproductive mode and things happen that are important. You don't want that to happen when you're postmenopausal. And so if you eat soy, its estrogenic phytoestrogens will come and plug up the receptor so that the estradiol can't plug into it, but they don't shift the gears and make things go into, you know, secondary sexual characteristics. It just sits there and has a little bit of effect to help counteract osteoporosis, but it reduces the risk of cancer because estradiol has to go somewhere else. So both turmeric and soy and flax are helpful this way. Now, look at my list of ingredients here. Food additives. Food additives increase the risk of prostate cancer dramatically and pancreatic cancer. May contain, they don't even know. What kind of list is that? All right, GLA yellow, you've lost me there already. Sterol lactate, what's that? Propylene glycol, at least it won't freeze. Let's see. Methylparabenin. I thought parabenins caused cancer. Well, benzoic acid. That definitely causes cancer. How about natural flavors? Oh, finally something good. Aren't you glad they put something natural in things? Oh, what are natural flavors? Well, I can tell you about where a lot of them come from and where I practiced. I practiced out in Iowa. In our town, we had a hog slaughter plant that slaughtered 14,000 hogs a day. I mean, trucks came all the way from Canada to keep that place going. But then you have all these bones. What do you do with all the bones? Well, one of my other patients took care of the bones. In his factory, they took all these bones. They boiled them down for 4 hours. A brown liquid came to the top, he said, and they put it in cans and sell it to the restaurants for soup base. I'm thinking, where did I eat soup last? And then I asked him, well, so you only make, soup base? Is that all you make out of the bones? He says, oh, no. We make some really good seasonings out of the bones. I said, seasonings? He says, yeah. I says, well, you mean, I know what, you know, like turmeric and, you know, and garlic and so many seasonings, but what kind of seasonings would you make out of hog bones? He says, oh, it makes things, everything taste better. I said, really? Well, what would you call it? He says, oh, natural flavors. I said, no, wait. Natural flavors? I said, the other day I went down to the supermarket, I bought a bag of dry apricots. They were sort of orange colored because they'd been sulfured, and the ingredients said apricots, sulfur, and then it said natural flavors. I said, do you think that could have had some of your hog bones in it? And he says, well, we make an awful lot of it. So, who knows? Well, the point is, the closer you can eat to the garden, the safer you are. I mean, when you buy stuff in a supermarket, it's been a long time since it was in anybody's garden. Most of the time, they spray it with a MSG-based spray because they found it helps it keep. They gas it, they fumigate it, they do all kinds of funny things to it. If you can have your own garden, weren't we told we should have our own gardens? We'd eat like kings and queens. Weren't we put in the garden to begin with? What did God feed us to begin with? Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food, and you will eat Snickers bars. Oh, no, 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 wait. And you will eat the plants of the field. That's what we were made to do, isn't it? Oh, no, there's a national emergency, national crisis. What's the crisis? Oh, no, we do not have enough resources to fight cancer. If everybody in America ate the number of servings of fruits and vegetables necessary to fight cancer, we would have a shortage overnight. We don't import enough. We don't grow enough. Even if everybody looked at the pyramid even, which is even less than what the National Cancer Society suggests, if everybody ate their 5 servings of fruits or vegetables, 5 a day, we'd be out. We couldn't come up with enough. So that means you better hurry up down to the supermarket and buy yours before the hoarders get there. Yes, that's true. So we have a problem. People are not eating what's good for them. After you have left the fresh fruit and vegetable section of the supermarket, you're getting a long ways from life. Who knows where you're headed? All kinds of junk that they've processed. Okay, let's talk about water. Proper use of water. Notice I didn't just have a glass of water there. Now your blood is largely water. Now we talked about your car and your filter and replacing your filter and changing your oil, but you can't change your blood. I mean, it can be done, but it's a difficult process. And so you got to clean your blood on the fly, if you please. How do you know when your blood's clean? Yes, your urine comes out pale. And how do you make your urine pale? Drink water. So you drink lots of water until your urine is pale, and then you end up with clearer and clearer system. That's what you want. And in that process, you might want to drink a lot of water, do a lot of work so you warm up, get in a sauna, and sweat. And sweating is a way of getting rid of toxins. You know, we as Americans, we don't like to sweat anymore. Sweating isn't cool. It's not sophisticated. It's not refined. And so we don't sweat. As a consequence, we put extra burden on our liver, kidneys, and lungs to get rid of toxins. And so we have more liver, lung, and kidney disease. And our skin isn't healthy. So we need to get more sweating going. Last of all, trust in divine power. Yes. Spiritual health, as we might call it. Compared to people with poor spiritual health, those with good spiritual health have longer lives, have better life satisfaction, deal better with illnesses, don't go to the hospital as often, they don't stay there as long if they do go, they suffer less anxiety and depression, and their immune systems are better. All interesting different studies. What's more, people who trust in God tend to be more helpful to others, live to give. In one study, giving support to friends, relatives, neighbors, and one's spouse significantly reduced mortality. You were made to live to give. Interesting to read the first chapter of Desire of Ages in that regard. Receiving support, on the other hand, does absolutely nothing to improve mortality. Oh, I thought I'd get sick and have somebody rub my back. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And when they looked at people who had breast cancer and watched them over time, they found out that the ones who were going to survive the longest had the best attitude. They had an attitude of gratitude, which significantly reduced the death rate from recurrent breast cancer. Attitude of gratitude. Happiness and health. People who are happier live longer, have fewer illnesses and less pain. Well, in summary, cancer is most often a result of a failure of the immune system. A failure to destroy bad cells and fix DNA. Bad cells are created by viruses, toxins, oxidative stress, poor nutrition, and/or radiation. Once cancer begins, it's often driven on by too many hormones or inflammation. The solution is to maximize our health and expel toxins through the natural remedies. Pure air, sunlight, abstemiousness, rest, exercise, proper diet, the use of water, gratitude, rejoicing, benevolence, and trust in God's love and care. Does that make sense? All right. Well, here's our website. You can download a handout for this lecture, in which there's probably 50% more than what I presented here to you, both in the causes and the treatments, or I mean the preventions. You can sign up for a newsletter. You can do that in back, too. You can watch a video or request a DVD. Just about everything we do is online in streaming video. And you can try a new recipe. We have a number of recipes there. Oh, we have our DVDs back here in the back, whole set. This is our last lecture. So And there's the back cover of that. Okay, questions. Time for questions. Okay, wait till the microphone gets to you. I guess right here. Oh, okay. Yeah.
What fruit or vegetable has iodine in it?
What fruit or vegetable? We usually look to seaweed to get iodine. Personally, we use something called kelp granules. It's harvested in Maine. 1/4 teaspoon has about 10 times as much iodine as the USRDA recommends per day. Other people who are dealing with breast cancer, and I say breast cancer because breast cancer is one of the big ones that comes up when you're low in iodine, along with fibrocystic breast disease and ovarian cysts, is iodophore. No, iodorol. Iodorol is an iodine supplement you can buy. That's two forms of iodine that's good for treating that. But usually the kelp and the seaweed things.
What about children and transitioning them from a three-meal to a two-meal plan?
What do you do to do that?
Well, and what age? Like currently, I mean, my husband and I are basically on a two-meal plan and maybe a snack in the evening. I'd like to know when to do that for her. I feel like this age it seems a little young, but what is your thoughts on that?
Good question. When should we transition kids to two meals a day? You know, Bible commentary, Ellen White comments, she says that Israel was on a two-meal-a-day plan up until the time of Solomon. And then, due to all those workers coming from Lebanon and all those strange women that Solomon loved, they started eating a big meal late at night, which is interesting, which would suggest once they weaned them, they put the kids on a two-meal-a-day plan. We put our kid on a two-meal-a-day plan about age 5. And then when we transitioned, we worked toward it somewhat, but then we'd have him drink a lot of water instead of eating supper sometimes. But if he was, you know, especially busy that day and especially hungry, we might let him eat a piece of fruit, but most of the time not for supper. Yes?
Actually, I got two questions. One from yesterday. You was mentioning a lot about oils. What if you, like my wife sometimes makes lemon juice and olive oil, is that still considered, you know, oil is, you know, you say limit the oil.
No, yes, right. What about oil? You know, it wasn't until the industrial age that we were able to extract all these oils that we have available to us now. And we've paid for it dearly with our health. I mean, the Bible does mention olive oil, but you can be sure it wasn't in quite the availability that we have it today. And so if you're fighting a certain disease, obesity, hypercholesterolemia, hypertension, cancer, whatever, you don't need the stuff. It's not a part of the solution. But if you're fine, you're healthy and everything, then, you know, the priests put a little bit of olive oil with some of their sacrifices. And so you kind of go by how your health goes. But if you want a clear mind and you want lots of energy, oil is not going to help you with those.
Okay, and you also mentioned yesterday you want to say something about why you drink out of a metal bottle and not plastic.
Yes, what about my metal bottle? It's not plastic. That's right. Okay, because they're healthier. Does that answer your question? Yeah, okay.
Do hair?
Yes, stainless steel. There's the stainless steel bottle. Sorry.
Do hair dye, women that dye hair, does that cause cancer?
Do hair dyes cause cancer? Hair dyes definitely increase the risk of autoimmune diseases, such as rheumatoid arthritis. Multiple studies looking at big populations, they always identify hair dyes. Study after study is causing rheumatoid arthritis and SLE and, you know, all these autoimmune diseases, which would make me think that they probably do also increase your risk of cancer, although I haven't gone looking specifically for hair dyes and cancer, but my suspicion is, yeah, they're probably related.
Where would be the best place you recommend getting vitamin B from?
Which vitamin B?
Just the majority of them together, 12, 6s, and 12 and 6 primarily, and the lower ones, 2.
Well, they all come from different places, essentially, but there are certain foods that are high in B vitamins, particularly grains. Some of them, though, green leafies will have some of them. And the hardest one to seem to satisfy everybody with is B12. And so where do you get B12? Well, the best place to get B12 is from green leafy vegetables from your garden that you don't scrub it all off of them. It doesn't come from the vegetable. It comes from yeast or from bacteria, mostly bacteria. And, you know, it's interesting. Over in India, you have the Hindus, you have veganism, you have all this, vegetarians. And they don't have the trouble of B12. But they move to America, eat all this highly washed, hygienic food, they get B12 deficiency because they're not eating plants from their own garden. It's all washed to death. And so that's the best place to get B12.
What is your opinion of using microwave ovens?
What about microwave ovens? You know, I remember back in the 80s, no, 90s, when the internet started getting popular and people were sending around emails and somebody supposedly put water in their microwave and put it on plants and the plants all died. And somebody else microwaved food and fed it to the rat and the rats all died. And, you know, it was hearsay and so forth. And so I was kind of curious about it. So me and, you know who Dr. DeRose is? He and I do the same thing, this kind of stuff. He and I both independently decided to look it up and figure it out from the medical research. What's the story on microwaves? And we looked far and wide, and our conclusion was, well, it cooks faster than conventional cooking, so it subjects the food to less heat, the studies show, and so you kill less vitamins. But the unit itself is sort of like a radar. I mean, they were originally called radar ranges. And so remember in the old days when at the fast food joint, or at least the Circle K on the door would say, beware if you have a pacemaker, we have a microwave in use. Well, the pacemakers have gotten better, so they aren't affected by microwaves. But the microwaves have gotten much, much stronger. Instead of being 400 watts, they're now 1,300 watts. And if you want to test your microwave, take any analog AM radio, dial it all the way to the bottom, turn it up so it's making static, and get near that thing when it's running. See how far you have to get away from it before it's not making noise. That's a huge, you know, amount of radiation. So, okay to cook in them, just don't do it in the same room that you're in. And if somebody's in the apartment next to you with their microwave right across from where your head is when you're in bed, whoa, it goes right through walls. One study looked at the radiation coming off the microwave. They put a tinfoil blocker on the front of them that was grounded, and they cut a square in the middle of the tinfoil blocker. Then they put something on the back that would pick up the radiation coming through. The tinfoil that was grounded stopped the radiation, but the square that was empty, the square went right through and right onto the film on the back. I mean, it goes right through you. It goes right through stuff. It's pretty dramatic. So that's the story on microwaves. We use it. When we turn it on, we kind of run for the other end of the trailer.
Could you speak a little bit about vaccines? And you mentioned the HPV vaccines specifically.
What about HPV? Vaccines are not a part of lifestyle medicine. They're not a part of natural medicine. They are sort of interesting in that you show up, you put up your arm, you have no idea what's in the syringe, and they inject it into you past all your usual natural defenses. We were out in California a year and a half ago, Christmas. We attend a church out there. A lady there works at an Adventist dentist's place down in Loma Linda. They had a family come in who usually brings in both daughters for dental care, but this time only the older daughter was with them. Oh, where's your younger daughter? She's in a nursing home. She's in a nursing home. Why? Well, the story unraveled. Doctor, pediatrician, said older daughter, 14-year-old, it's about time you had your HPV vaccine. And then looked over at the 12-year-old daughter, maybe you should get it too. Okay, let's get it over with. Both daughters got the vaccine. Less than 24 hours later, the younger one was in Loma Linda Children's Hospital on a ventilator. And her brain never recovered. These vaccines cause a huge reaction in the lining of your brain, causing encephalitis. Then I looked on the internet. There was 200 kids with the same story in England. A lot of these vaccines are hugely dangerous. And in my autoimmune disease talk, I show that an hepatitis B vaccine increases your risk of rheumatoid arthritis 1,700%, multiple sclerosis 400%, and SLE 800%. What they do is they antagonize your immune system, and funny things happen to you when you get your immune system all antagonized. Now, the vaccines seem to claim that they have wiped out infectious disease, but if you look at a long-term chart of what was happening to infectious diseases since the early 1900s, the incidence was dropping dramatically. When they added vaccines in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it did absolutely nothing to change the rate at which the infectious disease were already decreasing. And then you get a whole population that you know has been vaccinated for mumps, and mumps breaks out in the school district up, you know, in Parkersburg. Well, they were all vaccinated. Why'd they all get it? And then, of course, the flu vaccine, especially the swine flu vaccine, laced with all kinds of adjuvants, squalene from pig's brains, also known as M59. This stuff is known to cause autoimmune diseases. And they put in aluminum hydroxide. It mixes with fluoride from your water, causes the toxin in your bloodstream. tends to cause all kinds of problems. So it's sort of an interesting thing. Some people have won court cases against the vaccination companies for autism in their children. So even the courts are starting to side with people against these things. So it's a whole interesting study. It's a whole, you know. So we did a whole talk. We did a whole series on bird flu when it came out. And in that study, we discovered that in Canada, they tried to wipe out the flu with the flu vaccine. For 15 years, they gave vaccines to everybody and did absolutely nothing to reduce the incidence of the flu. And so, you know, they're sort of suspect they don't even work. And so vaccines are quite a, you know, interesting thing. And, initially maybe they had success and then they kind of got carried away because now they come up with a vaccine for everything. You look at a childhood schedule of vaccination, more and more vaccines. And so, all right, back here.
I'd like for you to comment on vaccines and seizures. And also, that's one part. And the other part is I'd like to get your thinking on the association of negative thinking, self-centered thinking, as a cause or association with cancer and autoimmune diseases, such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis.
Yes, very good. What about negative thinking and the incidence of disease? This is a very real connection. And the way you can track it through medically is what happens, for example, if you're angry for 5 minutes, then your IgA, an antibody in your tears and in your saliva, goes down for 5 hours. And so your immune system is totally down. The other thing that happens when you have all these negative feelings and reactions to life is that your cortisol level goes up. Cortisol then suppresses your immune system. It raises your blood sugar, and that wipes out your immune system somewhat. And so you end up with more disease. See, physiologically speaking, the immune system is controlled by the left side of your brain. If you get a stroke on the left side of your brain, your immune system goes down. But, by the same token, anything that affects that left side of the brain is going to affect your immune system. For example, if you get the flu sends your brain into alpha waves, and it shuts down your immune system for quite a while, to where after you've had the flu, you're very high risk of getting a pneumonia for quite a while after that. And so the connection between emotions and disease is quite large, and in certain autoimmune diseases, the risk is very high. Multiple sclerosis, big connection to mind-body issues. Rheumatoid arthritis, big connections. That's interesting. There's a book on the market by Dr. Don Colbert called Deadly Emotions, where he talks about a lady who got in a situation where she really was angry at somebody in her family. She wouldn't forgive them. And this doctor followed her for like 4 years and watched her get more and more crippled. And he traced it directly to the emotional content of her mind. So there's a very big connection, and that would be where I would see a fulfillment of what Ellen White talks about, that nine-tenths of disease originating in the mind. Does that answer your question? Okay. That has definitely been documented. It's also in the literature with the vaccine as one of the side effects. So it has been documented, yes.
Sorry, we weren't able to get to everybody's questions. I saw several more hands going up, but just for the time's sake. And I'm going to ask Dr. Clark to say our closing prayer for us here. It's been a blessing. Hasn't he been a blessing? Would you raise your hand and just thank him so much for being a blessing to us? Thank you.
All right, let's bow our heads. Dear Father in heaven, we want to thank you for this time that we could spend together thinking about health. We know you came to bring life and bring it more abundantly. And Lord, sometimes we need lots of help and wisdom to understand how to cooperate with you in that process. Lord, we pray that we won't be destroyed for lack of knowledge, but that you'll bless us. And if we've sowed wild oats, we want to pray for crop failure. And we pray that you'll restore unto us the years that the locusts have eaten. Give us wisdom in making the rest of our lives better. Teach us to count our days and be prepared for the future. And Lord, we thank you that you've given us plenty of fruits and vegetables in abundance. Lord, we need to learn to grow them in our own backyards as well so that we can be sure of their chemical content and their nutrition. Lord, give us wisdom to this end, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.